I'm broadcasting from Colorado Public Radio in Denver today as part of our election road trip. Denver is the fastest growing big city in the country. Last year, the population here jumped almost 3%, and you can feel that growing population when you drive. The traffic can be abysmal. Drivers here spent an average of 49 hours in traffic last year. 20 years ago, they spent just 31 hours, which is why Denver has been investing in this.
So back in 2004, Denver Metro voters approved a substantial tax increase to build out this rail system called Fast Tracks.
That's Ken Schreppel, a professor of urban planning at the University of Colorado, Denver. He says Fast Tracks, which has expanded the rail system here to 53 stations with more on the way, is a start. But Denver will need more to keep up with the population growth.
If you look at any great city, there's kind of two tiers of transit that that city would have. Take, you know, Paris, for example. You have the Paris Metro, and then you have the RER, which provides the commuter rail. In New York City, you've got the, you know, the commuter rail lines, and then you have the MTA, the subway system. So here in Denver, Fast Tracks and these regional rail lines represent kind of that commuter scale, suburbs to downtown type transport, which we do need. What we're really missing, though, is the intra-city transit that will allow people to be able to get around the city and from neighborhood to neighborhood without having to drive.
Do you expect that Denver will ever have that kind of thing, like a subway?
Well, whether it's a subway or not, you know, the technology or the mode is yet to be determined. But whether it's streetcars, more light rail, enhanced buses, bus rapid transit, there's a variety of transit technologies out there. And probably what we'll end up doing is a mix of those. But the city of Denver right now is just starting a planning process to envision exactly what that kind of intra-city transit system would look like.
That planning process is called Denverite, and it's being led by Chrissy Fanganello. She's director of transportation and mobility for the city of Denver, and she spends a lot of her time thinking about Denver's growth.
Yeah, Denver's growing very quickly, and it's not just Denver proper, but it's the entire region that's growing. And one of the things that we're really thinking about is not only how do we do this from the address this from a transportation perspective, but also from the place-building perspective. So that's why we're engaged in this Denverite process right now to talk about mobility and parks and recreation and land use and how do all those things play together.
Perhaps the best example of all those things playing together is Denver's newly renovated Union Station, a train hub that has helped revitalize an area near downtown called Lodo. While diners eat at upscale restaurants at street level, passengers down below make their way to trains on some of the city's new lines. Chrissy Fanganello says she hopes to double the amount of people using transit in some areas. What percentage of the population of this area do you need to be taking buses, trains, whatever, in order to keep the traffic at a manageable level?
So it really depends. In Denver proper, like folks that are coming into and out of downtown on a regular basis, almost 50%, 45, 50% of folks are coming into and out of downtown by transit, which is great. We've got other sections of the city that are sort of employment centers that don't have this quite the same rich transit that we do here in downtown. So it's trying to understand like what's happening in different regions of the city versus what's happening overall. And many times it's more competitive to drive your car from a time perspective, which is what people value a lot of, rather than to take transit or to ride a bike or walk or take a bus.
Or take an Uber or a Lyft, which Ken Schreppel says are helping in their own way.
It's part of the what we call in planning kind of the first last mile solution. If you do take transit to get to where you're going, sometimes that transit station is still, you know, it's not directly in front of where you need to go. It's maybe a mile or two away.
But Chrissy Fanganello says Uber and Lyft also add to traffic, including right in front of Union Station, where many people like to be picked up and dropped off.
I think it's providing people different mobility options, which I think is great. That's what we want to have people, you know, use those choices. So we're always supportive of that. One of the things that we're curious to understand, like, is what they're seeing actually less traffic, less cars on the road, or is there an increase in the cars on the road? So really trying to think about what are the outcomes we're seeking, not only from a place-building perspective, but also from an environmental and a sustainability perspective.
About an hour north in the Front Range near Boulder, growth is being felt in different ways. More and more houses are being built closer to the forest and closer to the danger of forest fires. One hit 6 years ago, destroying 168 homes. We met two researchers from the University of Colorado on a mountain road surrounded by the charred remains of pine trees from that fire. And Kristen Averett and Jeff Lucas had a warning. Climate change will bring more fires, and population growth will bring more homes into harm's way.
It exemplifies a trend that we've seen in the last 20 years towards more frequent, larger, more severe fires in ponderosa pine. And in part, it's come at a time when we've had a warming trend. The state of Colorado is a couple degrees warmer Fahrenheit than it was 30 years ago. That's definitely been a contributing factor. We also have more people living in these mountain environments, and there are more ignition sources. We've been suppressing fire in these forests for a long time. And so we've got multiple factors, climate change being one of them, that has tipped the scale towards more frequent and more severe fire in right close in to the heavily urbanized Front Range, and in right in these areas that, while not urbanized, are what we call the wildland-urban interface. And so you've got at least hundreds of houses within a fire footprint of anywhere from hundreds to thousands of acres.
What about drought? Have you had to deal with that more than before?
So since 2000, we've been in a drier period of weather in Colorado and across much of the interior west, including some bona fide severe drought years like 2002, 2012, 2013. 2010 was not one of them, except for the late summer into the fall, and it dried out the landscape just enough that when you had an ignition and a warm day, the Fourmile Canyon fire took off.
I think it's really important in terms of the relationship between fire and drought and really water and climate change is to really understand that the impacts of climate change primarily will be and are being delivered through changes in the water cycle. And it's that water availability, the connections with drought, the connections with fire. That's a really important point to understand.
What do you mean change in the water cycle? What does that mean?
So what happens is, as Jeff had alluded to, we've warmed in the state of Colorado by about 2 degrees Fahrenheit in the last 30 years. Well, when you warm the atmosphere, it can hold more water. So what happens is, because the atmosphere can hold more water when it's hotter, it means that you'll have more evaporation. So there's less water that's actually going to remain on the landscape.
So let me put that another way. A warmer atmosphere is a thirstier atmosphere. Mm-hmm. And so we've always had dry years as less precipitation. Drought years with very low precipitation, with a warmer and thirstier atmosphere, the drought impacts are worse than they were before.
You know, we think of people in Florida or New Orleans or some of the coastal areas as really being on the front lines of climate change. I think a lot of people don't think that in the mountains of Colorado this would be an issue, but you're saying it is.
I think we're all on the front lines of climate change. I think it would be a mistake to think otherwise. It impacts everybody so differently. Yes, you live in Florida, you have sea level rise. You live in the Mountain West, then you have issues related to water availability and fire and pine beetle. There are lots of different ways that climate change is manifest across the country.
So add climate change to the list of challenges for a growing region. The governor of Colorado, John Hickenlooper, has put that issue on his agenda, pushing to expand renewable energy, regulate methane, and increase transparency in the fracking industry. He's also said the state's transportation woes need to be addressed with new sources of funding. And he said something you'll rarely hear a governor say while in the midst of a population boom. He said the state is growing almost too rapidly.